Well, in our yesterday's class, we discussed about the equal importance of the universal and the individual, that one needs the other for self-manifestation. And they are kind of, you know, complementary to each other. But then now Sri Aurobindo takes up, as we said yesterday, this was more a theory and a philosophy. But he will take it up once again on the level of hereditary. How this question of the universal comes into my actual individual life. You see, you may ask the question, it's fine that we have a universal soul, life soul, and the soul of the nation, karma of the group, etc. But how am I individually affected by this kind of a group soul or karmic soul? Now here he takes up the question and he says, and the question is, how does that come about at all? I enter into birth, not in a separate being, but in the life of the whole, and therefore I inherit the life of the whole. So the first thing is, when my soul decides to take birth in a particular country, in a particular community, so that means it has chosen to experience that particular whole. That means whichever country or culture it chooses, it has now taken upon itself that environment, and it has chosen that specifically with a specific purpose. So immediately there is this, I inherit the life of the whole. Next, I am born physically by a generation which is carrying on of its unbroken history. So on the physical level, there is the unbroken history of the genetic history. So what we call the inheritance. So the body, life, physical, mentality of all past being prolongs itself in me, and I must therefore undergo the law of heredity. So herein comes the question of heredity. So we have two levels of birth, if I can say. One is the physical level, wherein you are carrying an individual lineage that comes through your genes. And the other level is the birth into a particular group soul, or a nation soul, or a culture soul. So you see, these two have to be taken together. You see, okay, let me not say that, he'll come to the conclusion, that how this individual, say I have a kind of a physical inheritance from my parents. Now in my next birth, if I choose to take birth in China, you see, culturally it's such a great difference between India and China. Then how am I supposed to adapt myself? Because I have carried a particular lineage, heritage of culture and inheritance of the physical. So these are the two levels that we have to constantly keep in mind. The physical inheritance comes to an end with the dropping of this body. But there is the universal inheritance which will continue wherever I go. Because who is that person who is bringing that universal inheritance? It's not the body, it's the soul. So the soul, wherever or in whichever country it goes to or culture it goes to in its next birth, will carry that universal experience. Now coming back, we'll see that once again being explained by Sri Aurobindo himself. So on the individual, the physical level, we are carrying an unbroken history, the body, life and physical mentality. Now please see, he calls it the physical mentality and not the mind consciousness. So the physical mentality, for example, we have these habits, the way of thinking. You know, the way an American would respond, the way a German would respond, the way an Indian would respond. These have come to be part and participle of the physical mentality of that culture. And also it is the same thing in a family too. A particular family behaves in a particular pattern. So once a soul comes into that family, he or she, the child, inherits the physical mentality. We are making a distinction here because although I may be born in a particular family with a particular heritage or inheritance, my mind need not be the same as my family. I can break through the tradition of my family's thinking, of my family's tradition of thinking, even my family's religion and everything. Because that's on the mental consciousness, where I'm free. But on the whatever is connected with the physical, I'm not that free. I get the impact from the physical, the vital and the physical mentality. The parent, says the Upanishad, recreates himself by the energy in his seed and is reborn in the child. But as soon as it begins to develop, a new and independent and overbearing factor comes in, which is not my parents nor my ancestry, nor past mankind, but I, my own self. Because what happens if we do not give credence to the question of the soul or the psychic being? Then we get into this problem that I would inherit only from my family, from the genes and everything, whatever the theory is. Then where does my individuality come in? The individuality comes in by the question of the psychic being. Whereas in the Western psychology, you would say, well, individuality comes in by what you make of yourself externally. But there also you will not be able to disconnect yourself from your genetic inheritance that much. But still, when it comes to the question of the mind, you know, the Western children are really independent. They think completely with great independence. They do not follow necessarily the family. In fact, that is one of the reasons, maybe there's the advantage of quitting the family when you are early, 16, 17, you are no more with your parents, you are independent. So that gives them this question of the thought, independent thought. Although they belong to a certain family, but because they move out of the family, the impact of the family will not be there on the mind. Physically, they will inherit all that. So he would say that there is something new, something that comes in overbearing factor, that is my own self. And this is the really important crowning central factor. That is, the soul or the psychic being is really the central factor. What matters most in my life is not my heredity. That only gives me my opportunity or my obstacle, my good or my bad material, and it has not by any means been shown that I draw all from that source. What matters supremely is what I make of my heredity and not what my heredity makes of me. That is the central line, if you can see that. So we have this heredity, but it is not the question of, you know, how we are overpowered by our heredity. But it's a question, as it says, that what I make of my heredity, which is of importance. So in a way, what we understand here is that heredity could be an opportunity or an obstacle. It creates a kind of a background. In fact, I was reading somewhere else also that this heredity is a kind of a gift that God gives us. But what's important is what we make of the gift. How do we return this gift back to the divine? In what shape? It's kind of, you know, all of us are given somebody this and kind of, you know, a raw material. Heredity is a kind of a raw material. Then what do we make of this raw material? And how do we present this as our surrendering gift to the divine? So what he says is that what matters most in my life is not my heredity. Because those of us who really bank on this heredity will not be able to evolve. Because they will always say, oh, I got this from my parents, you know, for example, in a business family, which has a tremendous stamp of heredity. I mean, in Gujaratis you see, and in Marwadis, it runs through generations and generations of family, because they say, my grandfather, great-grandfather, we're all business people, so it is there in our blood, and so we are good business people. It is, they exploit the factor of heredity. But the same thing, I was there in Gujarat a couple of months back. One of them spoke well. He says, look, Anand, we are very good in business because it is part of our heredity. But that has really stopped or not taken too far our pursuit of knowledge. Because we are so much embedded in this question of heredity of business that they become acute business people. I mean, nobody in the world can really match with the Marwadi or Gujarati business acumen. But then he says, we are falling behind very much in the pursuit of knowledge. Because no child would really pursue knowledge. He said, by the age 17, 18, you get into your father's shoes and you continue the business. You get married, and I've seen Rajasthani families, they get married very early, and then, you know, it goes on. So what is important here, he would say, is that what do we make of this heredity and not just repeat it and maybe improve upon it. If my father had 5 crores, you make it 10 crore business and then pass it on to your children, say you make 15 crores. So there's a slight improvement on the same factor of heredity. But what he wants is that we must make something more out of our heredity. The past of the world, bygone humanity, my ancestors are there in me. But still, I myself am the artist of my life, of myself, my life, my actions. And there is the present of the world of humanity. There are my contemporaries as well as my ancestors. The life of my environment too enters into me, offers me a new material, shapes me by its influence, lays its direct or its indirect touch on my being. So this is what we are discussing, that each individual has got the present of the world, that is my environment. Then there is the present of humanity, and there are my contemporaries as well as my ancestors. So you see, each individual is such a complex person. He carries the genetic heritage, he carries the collective impact on him, he carries the cultural past of that hole into which he has been born. So you see, we are apparently thinking that I'm an individual being with this degree of knowledge, with this work. But we are actually burdened with a lot of these things. In fact, when we come to spirituality, or the pursuit of a spiritual life, this is the liberation that we need to have. liberation from this past and the present and the environment and even the heritage. Because that is how we are bound to the past, carrying the burden of the past. So we cannot take pride saying, no, I'm an artist family, so I must pursue my artist. I'm a, you know, business family, so I will pursue my business. It could be there as your swabhava, no doubt about it. But to say that I cannot do anything else only because I'm from a business family, I'll do business, that would not be the right thing. Because we have to be, as they would say, free. Because this burden of heritage is a tremendous mental bond. And in fact, there was an extreme case. I mean, I was really aghast to know that when that person told me that how the mother emphasizes upon this freedom. That is part of that freedom is, you know, from your own religion, your past religion. I may be this belonging to this religion or that religion, but when you come to Sri Aurobindo, we have to unburden ourselves of all these things. It may be good or bad, doesn't matter. One of the major burdens is your own religion. But then somebody recently told me that he had a great problem because somebody had told a lie to the mother. And the mother took action based on that, not a reaction, but took some action. And the person who told me, he says, I knew that it was a lie, so he went to the mother and then he was pretty much vociferous, saying, mother, the other person told you a complete lie, the truth is this. And then he said he was so pained by this truth, I mean by this lie. And he says, I cannot sleep over it, I'm in deep pain, and he even started crying in front of the mother. And after his in a long crying and complaining, mother said, now is it over? Now keep quiet, I'll tell you. So when that whole thing was over, she told him, that was a conversation in French, I suppose. She said, even the amour propre pour la vérité should not be there. You can imagine. Please translate that. Amour propre is a self-love? No. It's called well, that means your egoistic love even for truth. It's more the egoistic. Amour propre is self-love. You see, if I say I love the truth, but that loving the truth with this kind of a possessive attitude is itself a self-love. I mean, you say, I am for Mother and Sri Aurobindo. You know, it's the truth that you cannot deny. But the very fact that you say it so vehemently with that possessive sense, she says, even that, and pour la vérité for the truth. The amour propre pour la vérité itself must be dropped. Dropped. So you can imagine the height of the notion of freedom. I mean, that really took me by surprise. Because we think, no, this is the truth and we should fight for the truth. And it says on the spiritual heights, nothing of the sort exists. So this person told me that, and then I said, Ma, you are really the supreme liberators. I mean, that love, a self-love, a psychic love is pure. It is not vehement. It is not that kind of that vital impact is not there in that love. So, that is what I was telling you here. That all these are there, the past is there, the present is there, the contemporaries are there, and even our ancestry is there. She says all that, lays its direct effect or its indirect touch on my being. I am invaded, changed, partly recreated by the environing being and action in which I am and act. But here again, the individual comes in subtly and centrally as the decisive power. What is supremely important is what I make of all this surrounding and invading present, and not what it makes of me. That is the real battle. Otherwise, you know, what do we call a common man and a normal man? One who compromises with this kind of a situation. Well, he says, I have inherited this family, this is my poverty, this is my situation, this is my education, and he succumbs. But here he says, the question of this invasion should not be there, and what you make of this circumstance and surrounding is what is important. And in the interaction of individual and general karma, in which others are causes and produce an effect in my existence, and I am a cause and produces an effect on them, I live for others, whether I would have it so or not, and others live for me and for all. Obviously, in a community and a society, I mean, take our own ashram community, we live for each other. I live for myself, I go to my department, I work in the press, I work in the dispensary. By working, I'm working for the community. And the community there, the sisters working in the dispensary, they are working for the dispensary, but when I go there, they attend on me. So they work for me, I work for them, there is a mutual thing. So in this world, you cannot be isolated completely, because there is, by whatever you are doing, there is a constant karma that is taking, that there is an interaction. You cannot avoid that. Still, the central power of my psychology takes its color from this seeing that I live for myself and for others, or for the world, only as an extension of myself, as a thing with which I am bound up in some kind of oneness. I seem to be a soul, self or spirit, who constantly, with the assistance of all, create out of my past and present my future being and myself to help in the surrounding creative evolution. Now, I think you have got the gist of the thing. As we discussed, you see, there is all this question what the scientists would tell us about the inheritance, the heredity and all that. But basically, what we have to understand is that there is someone else within us. What she says, I seem to be a soul, self or spirit, who constantly, with the assistance of all means what I have inherited, my surrounding, my past, my whole, with the assistance of all, create out of my past and present my future being. So this is where the karma is coming. You see, it's not just the past births. When I say about the karma or rebirth, it's not only my past birth, but there's a whole past of this humanity, of my culture, of my group, of where I'm born. So when you ask Shivananda Mother or any yogi a good question, we cannot just say yes or no. Because I think Mother was referring to this also. Yeah, I think I told you, I recently also read that. But she said, each time I answer to somebody, I have to take into consideration his past and his future. So this is the whole answer. And so we also have to take it that way, that we are not that simple creatures we seem to be. There is the burden of the past of the whole community. You see, when we are joined in a community, the past of each one of us gets together. So we become a kind of a common pool of our past. So when we are acting and reacting, it's not just X and Y. Now you have brought your past, he has brought his past. So in all my responses, we are clashing with an immense past. And imagine the wider you go in your consciousness, the wider is your contact with humanity's past. So what Sri Aurobindo and the mother would call about the subconscious of humanity is again there, but you and me, we are not aware of that. It is only mother and Sri Aurobindo who can battle that. But it is always there. So what we need to know here is that each individual soul struggles to make something of itself in the present, battling those forces of the eonic past of humanity, the past of your own immediate background, the present of your circumstances and your own heritage, physical heritage. So all these factors are kind of weighing upon the soul, and the soul has to grow from all this into its own being. That is why sometimes the souls fail to experience what they came here for, because there are so many of other forces, sometimes it cannot battle. So in a man's failure is not just his or her failure. There is the pressure of so many other things and so many other people. That's perhaps why we said in the ancient times that we must see what is the community that you are living in. You know, the surrounding, the people with which you live. Because it's not just the outer person that you are living with. It's the background. Not only the background, cultural background, but his own karma, of which we don't know much. So all these things have their own role to play. What then is this all-important and independent power in me? And what is the beginning and the end of its self-creation? Has it, even though it has something independent of the physical and vital, present and past, which gives to it so much of its material, itself no past and no future? Now we are coming to the last question. We have talked about the past of this human birth. But what about the past and present and future of that factor which is running through all the lives called the soul? Does it have a past or not? Is it something which suddenly emerges from the all soul at my birth and ceases at my death? Is this insistence on self-creation, on making something of itself for itself, for its own future, and not only for its fleeting present and the future of the race, a vain preoccupation, a gross parasitical error? That would contradict all that we see of the law of the world being. It would not reduce our life to a greater consistency with the frame of things, but would bring in a freak element and an inconsistency with the pervading principle. You know, if you do not believe in this rebirth and the question of the soul coming back again and again, he says, then what does it mean? That it is only something, it's a kind of a freak. The soul comes in for one birth, and then for a fleeting present, and then it leaves. He says, it really doesn't explain many of these factors, many of these questions, that if the body can have a kind of a inheritance, so there is a continuity of the body, then you think the soul, which is center to the body, that comes in, just uses this body and goes away? There's a complete inconsistency in this. So he would say, it is reasonable to suppose that this powerful independent element which supervenes and works upon the physical and vital evolution was in the past and will be in the future. It is reasonable also to suppose that it did not come in suddenly from some unconnected existence and does not pass out after one brief intervention. Its close connection with the life of the world is rather a continuation of a long past connection. And this brings in at once the whole necessity of past birth and karma. Well, obviously this we know, this we have been told time and again. If the soul itself doesn't have a continuity, then there's no meaning in the continuity of the birth itself, a continuity of this inheritance, of the subconscious and all that. Because you see, who is to use this body? If it comes for one birth, uses this body and leaves it, then what has happened to this body? What changes has it brought in? Nothing. Because it's there just for one little birth. If it leaves it, then this whole theory of this question of evolution of the on the physical level doesn't stand true. If the soul has a past and a future, then only there's a meaning in the continuity of the heritage. Heritage on the individual family level, heritage of the culture, heritage of human race, the karma and all that. I'm a persistent being who pursue my evolution within the persistent being of the world. I have evolved my human birth and I help constantly in the human evolution. I have created by my past karma my own conditions and my relations with the life of others and the general karma. That shapes my heredity, my environment, my affinities, my connections, my material, my opportunities and obstacles, a part of my predestined powers and results, not arbitrarily predestined but predetermined by my own stage of nature and past action. And on this groundwork, I build new karma and further strengthen or subtilize my power of natural being, enlarge experience, go on with my soul evolution. Well, it's a longest thing, but you can see there's so many things given in that single sentence. But the essence would be this, I suppose. That the individual soul is intricately connected with the world. Now, next sentence would be intricately connected with the world's evolution. And therefore, when we see this, that is predetermined by my own stage of nature and past action. See, I'm reminded of when I read this, that depending on my stage of evolution, my soul also chooses a particular culture or nation or area or family. Because here it would say that on this ground I build new karma and further strengthen or subtilize my power of natural being, enlarge experience. To give a simple example, that if a soul through its several births has come to a level where it wants to turn to a spiritual life, then it will choose a family or the country wherein it can get this spiritual experience. But if a soul is at a level where it is not yet ripe enough for a spiritual turn, where it needs to experience much more the material life, then it will take kind of a birth in a particular country, in a particular environment, where it gets the full experience. So, that is why when we say that not everybody can take to spiritual life. In fact, that is one of the things I was surprised when I read a letter from Sri Aurobindo, I think, where he says integral yoga is not meant for all. It is very specific. That's why we cannot propagate this integral yoga and says, well, you know, Sri Aurobindo has talked about integral yoga, all of us join in that. All of us may not be ready for that. So there's a ready means there is an inner readiness. Mentally it may be fanciful, yes, this is a new yoga and I want to do that. But is your inner being ready for this life? That's why this question of propaganda of Sri Aurobindo's yoga should not be there. And that's why they said, don't make a propaganda of my teachings. Because, and then that also I believe, those who are ready means the inner being is ready, they will find it somehow or the other, by one book, by some book or the other. The person was in the library hunting for some books, and by chance that person flipped a book and that was a book from Mother Shobhana. She didn't even know it was there. It almost fell on the person, and then when she opened that, she saw his mother's picture, Shobhana's picture. And that changes the life. So there could be incidents as simple as this, perchance and by chance and accidental. But if the soul is ready, it will find its own way. But otherwise, if you keep telling the mother is this, Shobhana is that, you must turn to integral yoga. If you have a lot of this, you know, unripeness within you, even, you know, so-called spending 55 years in the Shobhana ashram cadre, may not be really, I mean, you might have come on your own. Had the mother selected, yes, that's different. But even some people, they come on their own, because at one point, the soul must have recognized. But to lead a life of integral yoga, it requires a greater maturity. A recognition of the mother's path, the soul must have had. That is why people have come here, people are coming to Mother Shobhana in different parts of the world. But to lead this life, that is a spiritual life, one requires, as I find it here, a kind of a stage of one's nature and one's past action. The old idea, I'm sorry, this process is woven with the universal evolution and all its lines are included in the web of being, but it's not merely a jutting point or moment of it or a brief tag shot into the tissue. That is what rebirth means in the history of my manifested self and of universal being. That's the last para now. The old idea of rebirth errs, on the contrary, by an excessive individualism. Too self-concentrated, it treated one's rebirth and karma as too much one's own single affair. A sharply separate movement in the whole, lean too much on one's own concern with oneself, and even while it admitted universal relations and a unity with the whole, yet taught the human being to see in life principally a condition and means of his own spiritual benefit and separate salvation. You see, this is the problem with the old idea. And all our ideal of asceticism was partly also encouraged by this question of rebirth. That whatever you do, I mean, you have to build your good karma or past karma so that you get the mukti. So when it came to that, what happened? Then everybody started becoming ascetic because looked after their own life, because they wanted to have their own mukti and salvation. So this rebirth in the old, the way it was interpreted, led to an extreme asceticism. And because it led to a complete individual action. So what Sri Aurobindo has brought in this chapter, as you can now see, is that you are not only having an individual karma, there is the karma of the family, karma of the community, karma of the nation, karma of humanity. So we cannot be disconnected by them. Therefore, to seek that I am going to have my salvation if I go to the Himalayas is not necessary, because you are really connected with the whole. So he said that was the problem with the old. That came from the view of universe as a movement which proceeds out of something beyond, something from which each being enters into life and returns out of it to its source, and the absorbing idea of that return as the one thing that at all matters. You see, it was a very simplistic theory that my soul comes into the world, lives in for a moment and then goes back. But this question of the evolution of the soul was missing in the old ideas. You see how all these ideas really give us our impact, our lifestyle itself. Because I said the soul comes in, goes back. comes in, goes back. So what Sri Aurobindo has done is, he has added this idea that it doesn't just come in, live in for a few years and then goes back to his source. There is an evolutionary process from birth to birth. There is a question of the evolution of the soul. Then there is a completely different meaning that we have to live out our life here and not just seek how to return and how fast to return. So that is where we say that was a problem with the old ideal. Our being in the world, so treated, came in the end to be regarded as an episode, and in sum and essence, an unhappy and discreditable episode in the changeless eternity of the spirit. So you see, this is all philosophy, all thought, that why are we trying to return as soon as possible? Because this is an unhappy life, full of dukkha. So get rid of this life and then return. But if Sri Aurobindo says, no, this is not a life of dukkha and sorrow. There is a meaning here. We can make a better life here. Then if he says this world has a meaning and a purpose of evolution, immediately you have to have the corollary that the soul also must come with a purpose. So you see how one idea leads to the other, they are interlinked. If the world has to be transformed, then the soul must have an evolutionary purpose in its birth. Otherwise, you see, put the two different ideas, the world is a miserable place, then the corollary is that the soul must escape. It's a very natural corollary and a very healthy one maybe at that. But if you say, now the world has to be transformed, it is part and parcel of the Brahman's body. It has the potential to be transformed. At present it is full of ignorance and sin and all that. But it can be transformed. Then how do you transform? I say, I have only 70 years, 80 years to live by. He says, no, who said you are only here for 80 years? You are going to come back in a different body and help this same world for improving. And in the process, you will improve yourself. If it's just a question of being employed, then there's no meaning. But the soul is not employed by the divine to transform the world. In the process, it itself evolves. So you see how all these ideas are linked. So when we talk about the asceticism of the past, it's not so simple. It's not just rejection of life. There are so many things involved in that. Then we see, but this was too summary a view of the will and the ways of the spirit in existence. Certain it is that while we are here, our rebirth or karma, even while it runs on its own lines, is intimately one with the same lines in the universal existence. But my knowledge and self-finding too do not abolish my oneness with other life and other beings. Well, here comes this question of, you know, the famous saying of, we have quoted it so often, that Vasudhaiva Kutumbakam. Now we understand the philosophy behind it. It's not just we are one race and we are one family. It's nice to speak about that. But what does it mean? But we are intimately connected with this universality, even in our living, in our growth, in our future, in our past. So this idea of universality, of oneness not only with God or the eternal self in me, but with all humanity and other things, is growing to be the most prominent strain in our minds, and it has to be taken more largely into account in any future idea or computation of the significance of rebirth and karma. So now when he says that this idea is growing to be the most prominent strain. Well, I first read it as going to be the most prominent strain. Where it's more or less the same. Because as people are advancing, this is one of these ideas that was given to us long back by the Buddha. He puts it in the next line. It was admitted in old time, the Buddhist law of compassion was a recognition of its importance, but it has to be given a still more pervading power in the general significance. So what we had in the Vedas and the Upanishads, the Vasudeva Kutumbakam, got translated by the Buddha into that universal compassion. And today you have this great environmentalist, you know, struggling to say that environment is part that we should save. We should save why? Not because the earth is going to be, you know, without greenery and then we say we are going to die if there are no animals and plants. That is a scientific view. But the spiritual view is that we are one. It is to kill nature, it is to kill ourselves. It's not a scientific thing that we'll have nothing to eat. It's not a thing of you know, we'll have no food. As somebody, somebody said, you know, there's some particular insects, if they're not born in two cycles, then all the vegetation will die, whatever. But the inner truth is that this is a oneness literally. Because we have such a long past, such a wonderful present together, and we also share the future. So he says, this idea had come about in the past, very much so in Buddhism, but it has to be given a still more pervading power in the general significance. That is now the conclusion, wrap up as we say. The self-effectuation of the spirit in the world is the truth on which we take our foundation. A long self-weaving in time. Rebirth is the continuity of that self-effectuation in the individual, the persistence of the thread. Karma is the process, a force, a work of energy and consequence in the material world. An inner and outer will, an action and mental, moral, dynamic consequence in the soul evolution of which the material world is a constant scene. Remember this beautiful sentence. The self-effectuation of the spirit in the world is the truth on which we take our foundation. This is the central idea of all that we have read. That it is basically the divine who is self-effecting, means manifesting. So first of all, we must accept and understand that the divine is not that kind of a nirguna Brahman, static Brahman who is not doing anything. He is the dynamic saguna who is manifesting himself. And in this manifestation, the individual rebirth is the continuity of the self-effectuation in the individual. You see, how does the divine manifest himself? If he just came once and went away, there won't be a continuity of self-effectuation. Why, even in our human family, when the father passes on his music to his son, to his daughter. So what he had gathered as music in his being, he continues. His body goes. But as the Upanishad said, that he is reborn in the child. And so his manifestation of music continues. So similarly, the divine, if he wants to effectuate himself, there must be a continuity in the process. And this continuity is called karma. This process is karma, and the self-effectuation of the individual is called rebirth. That means rebirth is necessary for the divine to manifest himself in a continuous manner. And karma is the process. And that is the conception. The rest is a question of the general and particular laws. The way in which karma works out and helps the purpose of the spirit in birth and life. And whatever those laws and ways may be, they must be subservient to the spiritual self-effectuation and take from it all their meaning and value. The law is a means, a line of working for the spirit, and does not exist for its own sake or for the service of any abstract idea. Idea and law of working are only direction and road for the soul's progress in the steps of its existence. So lastly, we should not confuse that this process is the most important. The process is, as it says, is a direction. So if you say, no, my karma guides me in all my birth, no. Karma is a direction, what I have done in the past, what I have to do in the future. It's a direction, but it does not bind my soul. My soul can break away from karma and take a completely different direction. So it's not a binding factor. He would say it only gives us a kind of only a direction and a road. And a road for the soul's progress, the steps of its existence. Well, that brings us to the end of this chapter, Rebirth and Karma.